Welcome to a special edition of the 155 Election Podcast, the Ward 8 Hamilton City Council by-election. Episode 165. Michael Marson, you are running for city councilor in the Ward 8 by-election. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
A little bit about myself. I am a local labor activist. I am a federal public servant who's employed by the CRA. I was born and raised in Hamilton. I lived on the mountain for quite a long time. I am a union steward for my union, the Public Servants Alliance of Canada. I'm with them. I've been pretty pivotal in creating their Pride Committee for the Hamilton region. I am also a member of their, an executive member of their Political Action Committee. And I have served as a delegate to the Hamilton District Labor Council for them for a number of years now. I also serve as a member of the Hamilton Acorn Mountain chapter, and I've been a member at large for the Hamilton Mountain New Democrats for quite a number of years. In terms of other things that I've done in the community, I have been a regular volunteer at the Community Income Tax Program run out of Monique Taylor's MPP's office. I've also had the pleasure of participating in Coldest Night of the Year, which is run by Neighbor to Neighbor. And I've also been present just at numerous city council meetings and events across the city like Labor Day and Pride, things like that.
Why are you running for Ward 8 councillor and why should we vote for you?
I kind of have a twofold answer for that. The first is going to be sentimental. I was always told as a kid that I was smart. As I got older, I was told, you know, hey, why aren't you doing, you know, this? Why aren't you getting involved in this? Because I've always had ideas or thoughts about politics or how things run, how they should be more efficient, things like that. Last year, my grandmother passed away, and that was my nanny. I should say her name, my nanny. It was kind of a long time coming. She had a bad fall in 2020, and then she suffered a lot with dementia after that. But one of the things that I remember still very clearly in 2023 was she explicitly told me, hey, you know, you are smart. You need to run. You need to be involved because people need you. But the other part of that is I have a clarity of purpose when it comes to looking at this community, looking at our city, and looking at the challenges that we face. You know, whether that's housing, the price of everyday goods, the missing supports for people without homes or suffering from addiction, the feeling that so many people are talking about now, like feeling unsafe on the streets. And, you know, all of this sort of stuff is exacerbated by the wider problems in our world, such as Donald Trump's trade wars on Canada and things like that. And in particular, in a steel city like Hamilton, we feel those impacts even more harshly than other places. When I look at a lot of the other people in this race, I see a lot of buzzwords, you know, common sense, sensibility. I really don't think that we have time to waste on these deferrals that we see from politicians that have served us in the past. Like these tired policies where they tell us, you know, hey, we can't afford to fix this problem that we have. We can. And we might not be able to do it in the manner that they would want to address it, but that's why it's important that we have people who are willing to challenge conventions. And I want to be someone who will challenge those conventions. I want to be someone who is prepared to invest in the future, someone who's going to make our lives more affordable. And someone who really leaves this city in a better position than they found it, so that that way that the next generation, the people who come after us, who inherit it, they have a leg up. And that's always kind of where my vision goes, is that long term, how are we going to build a greater city for our kids?
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on residency and representation?
Yeah, so my thoughts on that are, I find it close to paramount. Especially in Hamilton, it feels like we have a lot of politicians that are just not from our city. And, you know, whether that's Lisa Hefner, who lives in Oakville, or the most recent MP from Hamilton Center, who I believe is from Mississauga. To me, it is very important that you be part and parcel to the community that you are making decisions in, because otherwise it doesn't impact you. You don't have any stake. And I don't personally feel like I can trust someone who doesn't have stake in the future of that community. I'm going to say, yeah, sure, there can be exceptions. Like, for example, I think Kodjo Damte, for example, he ran both on the Hamilton Mountain and in a ward that he didn't quite live in.
but he lived like right next to it kind of thing. When somebody lives like immediately next to an area, you know, whatever, that's fine, that's great. You probably work there or you regularly get your groceries there or your kids go to school there. You're still going to have that stake in that community that someone who is from an hour away really isn't.
What are two of your citywide priorities for Hamilton? What are two of your citywide priorities for Hamilton?
I feel that housing is one of the leading drivers of the affordability crisis in the city. And so, to my mind, I want to build more housing faster. I feel that we need to accelerate the timeframe of the residential zones project. That way we can continue to build up gentle density within the city. This is going to be great because by having more density within our city, we are going to be able to ensure that the residential tax levies on people in single family homes and things like that is going to be brought more in line with what we should be paying for folks. And also greater investment in public housing, looking to examples like Vienna, Singapore, where there's respectively like 50, 80% of public housing is owned by the government. And, you know, these aren't small cities by any means. I think they're both respectively 6 million. For sure, Singapore is. And these aren't the kind of public housing developments that you see regularly in North America, where it's just kind of done to cram as many people as possible, like sardines, into they're good homes that people want to live in. They don't want to leave, even when they have the option. And I don't necessarily think that, you know, 50% or 80% is where we should be aiming for, as a city, for affordable housing. But I think that it's aspirational to look at 10, 20 maybe, because that gives the city a tool by which we can affect the market in a more direct manner. Because we don't have tools like a rent freeze, for example, in a municipality. It's something that's controlled by the province. The other thing that I am very concerned about is public safety. And so I would want to see that addressed by greater investment in public health, particularly mental health and addiction services. I am going to be a key supporter of the 311 service through my Hamilton.ca and making sure that that gets rolled out as soon as possible. I feel as though that service is going to really help folks who are experiencing, for example, like a mental health crisis. It's going to make sure that they're going to be seen by trained medical professionals as opposed to the Hamilton Police Service. And so that should allow for better results for those folks. And it should also mean that the Hamilton Police are focusing on the things that they need to be focused on, like actual crime within the city.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8?
I think one of my biggest priorities is going to be making sure that the folks in our ward have someone who is accountable and accessible as a representative to them. I live on Mohawk Road, and the building that I live on is supposed to be undergoing development soon to include a second tower on the property. A number of folks from my building delegated to City Hall, and they had very critical questions about whether or not the amenities that would be in this new tower would be accessible for the people who live here, how that construction would impact either the people who live on the property already or our neighbors. Another critical question was, we are running out of accessible parking on the property. Where are we supposed to park when there's so many seniors or people who have disabilities that live there? And they went to City Hall, they delegated, they had all these questions. I think that was June of last year. And, you know, one of them was is literally my direct neighbor, and she still hasn't gotten a response. I think that we need to make sure that these sorts of questions are getting answered so that that way the people in our community are really aware of what's going on and how things are going to impact them. I'm going to be accessible by, you know, making myself available just physically and, you know, also in terms of, for example, I want to explore digital office hours. That way the folks who don't have the ability to come down to an office, maybe because they have, as an example, like a physical disability which would prevent them, or that it wouldn't be as easy. I want to make sure that those sorts of folks are getting their concerns met as well. I'm also intend to have regular town halls with the community. I want to make sure that, you know, I'm being accountable to people and that they are always clear where I stand and that I'm always giving them answers. The other thing that I really want to do is make sure that we are shepherding projects
that are going to be making our community better. I know that there is a redevelopment going on, for example, at the West 5th campus that's going on where the old psychiatric hospital was. And they are redeveloping that to include better supports for our community, more housing, and overall, that's the sort of projects that I want to see be championed at City Hall, so that that way we are making sure that we have that balance of the things that we need for our community, as well as addressing those greater problems that I talked about, which is things like housing and the affordability of it.
The city of Hamilton is facing a fiscal crisis. According to the city's own financial projections, issued before the cybersecurity failure that's going to cost over $100 million, Hamilton's discretionary reserve was forecast to be down to just $1 in 2027. The city's last financial update was in November 2023, so none of us know the current state of city finances. In November 2026, when the new council term begins, decisions will need to be made. What are your thoughts on this coming fiscal cliff, and how do you plan to approach budgeting?
So I grew up in a working-class family, and so, you know, there were always times when we had to budget, whether that was for food or for those little luxuries in life, like going to the movies, things like that. So one of the things, one of those values that was instilled in me as a child was fiscal prudence. Critical thinking about strategic spending to determine and ensure best long-term outcomes and investments. You know, borrowing a phrase, I want to avoid penny-wise, pound-foolish thinking. And I want to really address the roots of issues. In my professional life, as an employee of the CRA, when I advise taxpayers navigating tax legislation or, you know, international tax treaties, this is often reinforced. I am always going to be prepared to review all expenditures critically, to look for savings or manners by which we can ensure that our city runs more efficiently. And one of the things that I want to promise to folks is I'm not going to get bogged down in the games that certain politicians like to play by nitpicking over line items that are fractions of a percent of the budget. I think that we can do a better job in our city of diversifying revenue within it, of trying to make sure that there is more small businesses available. One of the things that I would like to do to address that is with zoning reform. That would allow, for example, small businesses to be positioned in residential areas so that that way, you know, there's going to be maybe a cafe on the corner of your, you know, residential lot, and you can go there to grab your coffee in the morning and you can just walk as opposed to having to drive down to Tim Hortons. Or maybe there's a bakery where you can walk to get, you know, some bread or those little daily essentials without having to drive over to Fortino's. And by pushing for those sorts of opportunities where people can create those small businesses, we're going to create a greater and stronger economy within our city where our finances aren't so tied up in just residential taxes on people's homes and things like that.
As Ward 8 counselor, you will have around $2 million in discretionary funds to allocate. How do you plan to manage these funds?
I intend to manage these funds with the same stewardship that I intend to handle the budget, where I will be looking at the critical needs of our communities and seeing where that spending is going to be best applied for those long-term results. I'm going to be working with the community to make sure that their needs are going to be met. So in my mind, what that looks like is it will be public consultation, speaking with folks directly, finding out exactly what we need in order to make sure that we are addressing those needs of the community.
You're promising to improve City Hall. I'm feeling exhausted on this topic because I heard every candidate in the 2022 change election promise they were going to make City Hall transparent. If elected, you'll have 1 year inside City Hall before the new council term begins. How will you use that year to prepare an action plan on transparency for the next council term?
People in our city can't make decisions without the appropriate information available to them. City Hall has been bad, not just with this city council, but with previous city councils as well. And I know that a lot of this is inherited problems. For example, with the sewage spill that has been leaking for literally decades. But it is the right of our citizens to know exactly what's going on in City Hall. Too much is happening in camera. And as you say in the question, too much of the information is just not being made readily available to folks. I don't know what sort of tools will be available to me as a city councilor to pressure all of city council to, for example, have less in-camera meetings. For my sake, I will make sure that every time that I have the opportunity to speak on that issue, I will not be voting for an in-camera meeting, unless it is the exception which proves that rule. You know, we're not dealing with national secrets here or anything like that. I am sure there is nothing that is so critical that we are dealing with in City Hall that we can't be discussing this openly with the folks in our city. When it comes to not disclosing line items, when it comes to not having that report available, I will make those sorts of numbers available or those sorts of reports available either through my own means, whether that is, you know, on a website or whatever is available to me, to make sure that folks are getting that information, that they know exactly what's going on.
October 8th, you'll be sworn into office and take your seat in the council horseshoe. On that day, council will vote on zoning reforms, including upzoning Upper James between the Link and Rymal, and residential zoning reform to prevent medium-density missing middle housing along minor and major arterial roadways. The housing crisis will be a literal day one issue for you. How will you approach planning approvals, and how will you use zoning reform to address housing shortages?
I'm fully in favor of zoning reform. I think that it is one of the tools that we have available to us as a city to really encourage the kind of developments that we need in order to get housing available to folks faster. As I said before, that includes things like accelerating the timeframe of the residential zones project. We can create a city that is built in a way which better serves our needs, which creates better and more novel forms of housing for people, and which allows us to, again, diversify those forms of revenue that's coming into the city by encouraging mixed use, which will allow for more small businesses, which, again, takes some of that load off of individual taxpayers at the end of the day. What I want to see with zoning reform is I want to see it become more inclusive as opposed to exclusive. I want to look at international models that you're going to see, like, for example, Tokyo, where when they have housing and they try to determine how tall, for instance, a building can be, it becomes a mathematical equation. It's something that doesn't need to be debated every single time that it comes up. And so what they do is they look at how close the building will be built to a road versus how tall they want it to be, and it just becomes simple math. Things like that can do a lot to ensure that we are removing obstacles to building that sort of gentle density and to make it so that that way we are having greater mixed use in neighborhoods that allow for better communities for our families. There are things that are not going to be available to us that I would love to see. One of the things that I'm going to ask City Council to explore is allowing for buildings to be built with a single stairwell, but with greater number of stories. Right now in the province, it is limited to two. But if you look at internationally, that is one of the lowest height restrictions for buildings nowadays in the world. It is much more common to see four, five, even six stories where the housing is all off of one stairwell and accessible through that as opposed to having two. When you have two, it limits the types of designs that you can build, which forces, for example, three-bedroom units as opposed to four-bedroom units, which means that for a lot of families, it's just not going to be feasible to live in a unit like that. Those are the sorts of things that we can do to explore changes with zoning and things like that in order to make sure that we better serve the needs of people.
Let's talk about development charges. Mississauga Mayor Carolyn Parrish was elected on June 10th, 2024. She formed a housing task force that first met on July 10th and issued a comprehensive report on January 22nd, 2025. The report includes actionable changes to Mississauga City policies, processes, and development charges. Mississauga's incentives are tied to municipal affordability and family housing goals, designed to maximize return without creating a tax burden for existing residents, and are time-limited to ensure developers actually build. This proves it's possible for municipal government to act quickly in response to current housing conditions. Development charge reform will likely be an issue in the 2026 municipal election. What are your thoughts on development charges? What goals, if any, do you have for DC reform?
I think that Mississauga has given us a model that we can look to ensure, just as you said, that those tax levies that are being put on our families in the city are going to be, and I really loved hearing that they had it as time limited as well, because a problem that you often see when it comes to the development process is developers will get these plans approved and then they'll sit on them, especially when it comes to something like, for example, a condo, because it's just basic speculation. I know where the market is now. I can see a direct straight line upward that has been rising upward for the last 30 years in terms of how housing has cost people in our city and people all across our country. By having that time limit be there, we're ensuring that those developers are actually following through on their commitments to our city and building that housing. It's something that I really feel is something that we're going to need to come down strongly on. When it comes to the reform of development charges, yeah, I think I'm probably going to be following this model or a similar one as a guide to how I would, as a city councilor, try to make sure that we are appropriately funding our city budget.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous road, with nearly every section significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What's your plan to address safety on Upper James? Does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement them?
Upper James, as someone who has walked it many times, I know just how dangerous it is. I feel as though the plan that we need to address safety there is going to require probably those unpopular changes, like you were saying. To my mind, that means we're going to need a lot more better road design. This is something that we can use to encourage folks to drive more safely without changing speed limits, for example, which is just a blunt instrument and often doesn't matter, especially on very straight arterial roads like Upper James. What we need to see are, I think, physical boundaries included on it. As an example, we can line Upper James with trees, which produces coverage for pedestrians, both from sunlight, which is, you know, an ongoing issue as during the summer, but also provides physical barriers from cars and provides something that is a little bit more of an insurance than just the curb. When it comes to our intersections, it's going to mean possibly having more medians or crosswalks, redesigning crosswalks so that way they're going to be safer for folks who are trying to just get across the road. That probably also would possibly see like a tightening of the street, you know, how many lanes are available for folks. I get that those sorts of things aren't going to be popular, but we need to ensure that especially a road as critical to our city as Upper James is safe both for the people who are driving on it and for the people who are walking or riding bikes. I feel as though I am a very good communicator and that I am able to explain to folks, you know, exactly why those sorts of changes are needed. And so for me, advocating and championing these sorts of unpopular things, if necessary, I'm not going to shy away from them. I'm going to be right there at the forefront, making sure that people know why these sorts of changes need to happen.
What's your overall plan to address road safety?
So with Acorn, we've recently started talking to the ward counselor, Esther Pauls, about doing a speed safety analysis of Mohawk Road. I want to work with her office on that and to make sure that we are doing those sorts of studies on the more dangerous areas, not just in our ward, but also in our city. I think that injuries and deaths from motor vehicles are one of those things that can be prevented. And they can be prevented with appropriate design, and they can be prevented with better planning. And so that's something that I really want to focus on when addressing that public safety aspect and making sure that our roads are going to be walkable for folks, going to be more accessible.
Hamilton City Council meetings, attendance, respect, and focus are all issues. I want to ask you about one specific issue: councilors leaving, not attending, or not focusing attention on public delegates. What expectation will you set for yourself when it comes to listening to delegations as a councilor?
Yeah, so as you say, attendance is piss poor, honestly. I know that at the end of last year, they scheduled less meetings for city councilors, and I think it was 20% or roughly around that many. And even still, councilors still aren't meeting those obligations that they have to their constituents. And often for me, what's most egregious about this is it can be as simple as opening a Zoom call and just listening to folks, right? You can do that from anywhere. If you need to be away from city council physically for a day, you can still be there and listen to people. It's the bare minimum of what we should be expecting from our city councilors, like to actually show up and do their job. I don't know about you. Well, I guess you're an independent journalist, so this doesn't quite impact you. But like for me, if I don't show up at work, I don't get paid, man. Like, why are these guys still drawing full salaries when, you know, they can't even show up to some of these meetings? It's a little ridiculous to me. If there is some function by which we can penalize that, I'm happy to explore it even. It's just, I know that there are some city councilors that do have actual good reasons, okay? I'll get that stated right now. I know, for example, certain people have family issues that cause them to have to step away from the job. Absolutely. Totally respect it. I understand. Depending on the circumstances, I feel as though, depending on how long it might be, if that's something that needs your long-term concern, that might be something that you need to step away from the role in order to ensure that your constituents are getting the best service that they need. I would like to think that I would do that if those circumstances ever came up for me. But that's, to me, what I feel is the most basic common courtesy that you owe to your constituents at the end of the day. And I'm always going to make sure that I am available and listening and responding. You know, not just being there, not just being present, but actively listening to people and making sure that I'm rephrasing their questions and make sure that I understand exactly what they say, and then communicating with them directly to make sure that we are addressing concerns.
Ontario's Municipal Act was amended to make mayors more powerful and more accountable as the head of council. How do you believe strong mayor powers have changed the role of councillors, and how do you see yourself effectively achieving your platform in cooperation with the mayor and 14 other councillors?
Everything's going to be about negotiation. As a union steward, I am often used to having to deal with people who have a lot more power in a given situation than I do. And so meeting them where they are and trying to get them to where I am is something that I am very used to. And that's the sort of skill that I'm going to be bringing to this role as a city councilor, is being able to figure out exactly where other people stand and get them to see the things that we need to be doing to achieve the best results for our city for the long term, not just kicking the can down the road, as it feels so very often that we are doing in this city, whether that is relying on consultants to.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
I would love to do a study with city staff to identify changes that we need to make in order to make sure that we are better meeting the needs of folks. I understand, for example, that the development process is something that can often be beleaguered with lots of minor changes and variables and things like that. I want to be able to look at and identify with city staff what common things are being asked for in this process, and maybe have them more standard, included into the standard process, so that that way we can ensure that better meeting the development timelines that we need to get better housing and more accessible housing in our city. one of the things you identified in the email that you sent to us was, for example, that marriage certificates are something that's more expensive in Hamilton than anywhere else. When identified with changes like that, I'm going to make sure that we are identifying what we can change for city services to make sure that we are getting people those services better, faster, more efficient, and within their budgets. I want to see greater investment in public services, in particular, public transit. I am going to be pushing for the heat protections bylaw to be implemented by city council to ensure that housing is cooler for folks that live in our city.
What three words do you hope I'll use to describe your 10 months as a city councilor?
ABC. Accountable, bustling, and creative. Public service is a vocation to me. It is something that I fell in love with during the pandemic when so many people were going through a hard time. I ended up with a job with the public service and the CRA helping folks get, for example, their child benefits, their emergency benefits from the federal government and things like that. There was a lot of immediate gratification there for me, and it made me realize just how much I need to help other people